How would that work, Harry? Could it be done from somewhere else? I nodded. The killer would need to have something to connect them to the victims. Hair, fingernails, blood samples, that sort of thing. Like a voodoo doll? Exactly the same, yes. There's fresh dye in the woman's hair, Murphy said. I nodded. I was going to say that. Maybe if you find out where she got her hair styled, you might find something else. I don't know. Is there anything else that you can tell me that might be of use? Yes, the killer knew the victims, and I'm thinking it was a woman. Carmichael snorted. I don't believe we've got to sit here and listen to this. 9 times out of 10, the killer knows the victim. Shut up, Carmichael, Murphy said. What makes you say that, Harry? I stood up and rubbed my face with my hands. The way magic works, whenever you do something with it, it comes from inside you. Wizards have to focus on what they're trying to do, visualize it, believe in it to make it work. You can't make something happen that isn't part of you inside. The killer could have murdered them both and made it look like an accident, but she did it this way. To get it done this way, she would have had to want them dead for very personal reasons. To be willing to reach inside them like that. Revenge, maybe. Maybe you're looking for a lover or a spouse. Also because of when they died, in the middle of sex. It wasn't a coincidence. Emotions are a kind of channel for magic, a path that can be used to get to you. She picked a time when they'd be together, to be charged up with lust. She got samples to use as a focus, and she planned it out in advance. You don't do that to strangers. Crap, Carmichael said, but this time it was more of an absent-minded curse than anything directed at me. Murphy glared at me. You keep saying she challenged me. Why the hell do you think that? I gestured toward the room. Because you can't do something like that without a whole lot of hate, I said. Women are better at hating than men. They focus it better, let it go better. Hell, witches are just plain meaner than wizards. This feels like a feminine vengeance of some kind to me. But a man could have done it, Murphy said. Well, I hedged. Christ, you're a chauvinist pig, Dresden. Is it something that only a woman could have done? Well, no, I don't think so. You don't think so, Carmichael drawled. Some expert. I scowled at them both, angry. I haven't really worked through the specifics of what I need to do to make someone's heart explode, Murph. As soon as I have occasion to, I'll be sure and let you know. When will you be able to tell us something? Murphy asked. I don't know, I held up a hand, forestalling her next comment. I can't put a timer on this stuff, Murph. It just can't be done. I don't even know if I can do it at all, much less how long it will take. At $50 an hour, it better not take too long, Carmichael growled. Murphy glanced at him. She didn't exactly agree with him, but she didn't exactly slap him down either. I took the opportunity to take a few long breaths, calming myself down. I finally looked back at them. Okay, I asked them. Who are they? The victims. You don't need to know that, Carmichael snapped. Ron, Murphy asked, I could really use some coffee. Carmichael turned to her. He wasn't tall, but he was all but looming over Murphy. Oh, come on, Murph. This guy's jerking your chain. You don't really think he's going to be able to tell you anything worth hearing, do you? Murphy regarded her partner's sweaty, beady-eyed face with a sort of frosty hauteur, tough to pull off on someone 6 inches taller than she. No cream, 2 sugars. Damn it, Carmichael said. He shot me a cold glance, but didn't quite look at my eyes, then jammed his hands into his pants pockets and stalked out of the room. Murphy followed him out to the door, her feet silent, and shut it behind him. The sitting room immediately became darker, closer, with a grinning ghoul of its former chintzy intimacy dancing in the smell of blood and the memory of the 2 bodies in the next room. The woman's name was Jennifer Stanton. She worked for the Velvet Room.
I whistled. The Velvet Room was a high-priced escort service run by a woman named Bianca. Bianca kept a flock of beautiful, charming, and witty women, pandering them to the richest men in the area for hundreds of dollars an hour. Bianca sold the kind of female company that most men only see on television and the movies. I also knew that she was a vampress of considerable influence in the Never Never. She had power, with a capital P. I tried to explain the Never Never to Murphy before. She didn't really comprehend it, but she understood that Bianca was a badass vampress who sometimes squabbled for territory. We both knew that if one of Bianca's girls was involved, the vampress must be involved somehow, too. Murphy cut right to the point. Was this part of one of Bianca's territorial disputes?
No, I said, unless she's having it with a human sorcerer. A vampire, even a vampire sorcerer, couldn't have pulled off something like this outside the Never Never.
Could she be at odds with a human sorcerer? Murphy asked me.
Possible, but it doesn't sound like her. She isn't that stupid.
What I didn't tell Murphy was that the White Council made sure that vampires who trifled with mortal practitioners never lived to brag about it. I don't talk to regular people about the White Council. It just isn't done.
Besides, I said, if a human wanted to take a shot at Bianca by hitting one of her girls, he'd be better off to kill the girl and leave the customer healthy to spread the tale and scare off business.
Murphy said. She wasn't convinced, but she made notes of what I said.
Who is the man? I asked her.
Murphy looked up at me for a moment and then said evenly, Tommy, Tom.
I blinked at her to let her know she hadn't revealed the mystery of the ages.
Who?
Tommy, Tom, she said. Johnny Marconi's bodyguard.
Now it made sense. Gentleman Johnny Marconi had been the thug to emerge on top of the pile after the Vargassi family had dissolved into internal strife. The police department saw Marconi as a mixed blessing. After years of merciless struggle and bloody exchanges with the Vargassis, Gentleman Johnny tolerated no excuses in his organization, and he didn't like freelancers operating in his city. Muggers, bank robbers, and drug dealers who were not part of his organization somehow always seemed to get ratted out and turned in, or else simply went missing and weren't heard from again. Marconi was a civilizing influence on crime, and where he operated, it was more of a problem in terms of scale than ever before. An extremely shrewd businessman, he had a battery of lawyers working for him that kept him fenced in from the law behind a barricade of depositions and papers and tape recordings. The cops never said it, but sometimes it seemed like they were almost reluctant to chase him. Marconi was better than the alternative, anarchy in the underworld.
I remember hearing he had an enforcer, I said. I guess he doesn't anymore.
Murphy shrugged.
So it would seem.
So what do you do next?
Run down this hairstylist angle, I guess. I'll talk to Bianca and to Marconi, but I can already tell you what they'll tell me.
She flicked her notebook closed and shook her head, irritated. I watched her for a moment. She looked tired. I told her so.
I am tired, she replied.
Tired of being looked at like I'm some sort of nutcase. Even Carmichael, my own partner, thinks I've gone over the edge in all of this.
The rest of the station thinks so, too? I asked her.
Most of them just scowl and spin their index fingers around their temples when they think I'm not looking, and file my reports without ever reading them. The rest are ones who have run into something spooky out there and they're scared shitless. They don't want to believe in anything they didn't see on Mr. Science when they were kids.
How about you?
Me? Murphy smiled, a curving of her lips that was a vibrantly feminine expression, making her look entirely too pretty to be such a hard ass.
The world's falling apart at the seams, Harry. I guess I just think people are pretty arrogant to believe we've learned everything there is to know in the past century or so.
What the hell? I can buy that we're just now starting to see things around us in the dark again. It appeals to the cynic in me.
I wish everyone thought like you do, I said. It would cut down on my crank calls.
She continued to smile at me, impish.
But could you imagine a world where all the radio stations played ABBA?
We shared a laugh. God, the room needed a laugh.
Hey, Harry, Murphy said, grinning. I could see the wheels spinning in her head.
Yeah?
What you said about being able to figure out how the killer did this.
About how you're not sure you can do it.
Yeah.
I know it's bullshit. Why do you lie to me about it?
I stiffened.
Christ, she was good.
Or maybe I'm just not much of a liar.
Look, Murphy, I said, there's some things you just don't do.
Sometimes I don't want to get into the head of the slime I go after either. But you do what needs to be done to finish the job.
I know what you mean, Harry.
No, I said shortly. You don't know.
And she didn't. She didn't know about my past, or the White Council, or the doom of Damocles hanging over my head.
Most days, I could pretend I didn't know about it either.
All the council needed now was an excuse, just an excuse to find me guilty of violating one of the 7 laws of magic, and the doom would drop.
If I started putting together a recipe for a murder spell and they found out about it, that might be all the excuse they needed.
Murph, I told her, I can't try figuring this spell out. I can't go putting together the things I'd need to do it. You just don't understand. She glared at me without looking at my eyes. I had never met anyone else who could pull that one off. Oh, I understand. I understand that I've got a killer on the loose that I can't catch in the act. I understand that you know something that can help, or you can at least find out something. And I understand that if you dry up on me now, I'm tearing your card out of the department Rolodex and tossing it in the trash. Son of a bitch. My consulting for the department paid a lot of my bills. Okay, most of my bills. I could sympathize with her, I suppose. If I was operating in the dark like she was, I'd be nervous as hell, too. Murphy didn't know anything about spells or rituals or talismans, but she knew human hatred and violence all too well. It wasn't as though I was actually going to be doing any black magic, I told myself. I was just going to be figuring out how it was done. There was a difference. I was helping the police in an investigation, nothing more. Maybe the White Council would understand that. Yeah, right. And maybe one of these days I'd go to an art museum and become well-rounded. Murphy set the hook a second later. She looked at me and my eyes for a daring second before she turned away, her face tired and honest and proud. I need to know everything you can tell me, Harry. Please. Classic lady in distress. For one of those liberated professional women, she knew exactly how to jerk my old-fashioned chains around. I gritted my teeth. Fine, I said, fine. I'll start on it tonight. Oh, boy. The White Council was gonna love this one. I just have to make sure they didn't find out about it. Murphy nodded and let out a breath without looking at me. Then she said, let's get out of here, and walked towards the door. I didn't try to beat her to it. Then we walked out. The uniformed guards were still lazing around the hall outside. Carmichael was nowhere to be seen. The guys from forensics were out there, standing around impatiently, waiting for us to come out. Then they gathered up their plastic bags and tweezers and lights and things and filed past us into the room. Murphy was brushing at her windblown hair with her hand while we waited for the ancient elevator to take its sweet time about getting up to the 7th floor. She was wearing a gold watch, which reminded me. Oh, hey, I asked her, what time is it? She checked. 2:25, why? I breathed out a curse and turned for the stairs. I'm late for my appointment. I fairly flew down the stairs. I'd had a lot of practice at them, after all, and I hit the lobby at a jog. I managed to dodge a porter coming through the front with an armload of luggage and swung out into the sidewalk at a lope. I have long legs that eat up a lot of ground, and I was running into the wind, my black duster billowing out behind me. It was several blocks to my building, and after covering half of them, I slowed to a walk. I didn't want to arrive at the appointment with Monica missing man, puffing like a bellows, with my hair windblown and my face streaming with sweat. Blame it on being out of shape due to an inactive winter season, but I was breathing hard. It occupied enough of my attention that I didn't see the dark blue Cadillac until it had pulled up beside me, and a rather large man who stepped out of it into the sidewalk in front of me. He had bright red hair and a thick neck. His face looked like someone had smashed it flat with a board, repeatedly, when he was a baby, except for his jutting eyebrows. He had narrow little blue eyes that got narrower as I sized him up. I stopped and backed away, then turned around. Two more men, both of them as tall as me and a good deal heavier, were slowing down from their own jog. They had apparently been following me, and they looked annoyed. One was limping slightly, and the other wore a buzz cut that had been spiked up straight with some kind of styling gel. I felt like I was in high school again, surrounded by bullying members of the football team. "Can I help you, gentlemen?" I asked. I looked around for a cop, but they were all over at the Madison, I suppose. Everyone likes to gawk. "Get in the car," the one in front of me said. One of the others opened the rear door. "I like to walk. It's good for my heart." "You don't get in the car, it isn't going to be good for your legs," the man growled. A voice came from inside the car. "Mr. Hendricks, please, be more polite. Mr. Dresden, would you join me for a moment, please? I'd hoped to give you a lift back to your office, but your abrupt exit made it somewhat problematic. Perhaps you will allow me to convey you the rest of the way." I leaned down to look into the back seat. A man of handsome and unassuming features, dressed in casual sports jacket and Levi's, regarded me with a smile. "And you would be?" I asked him. His smile widened, and I swear it made his eyes twinkle. "My name is John Marconi, and I'd like to discuss business with you." I stared at him for a moment, and then my eyes slid aside to the very large and very overdeveloped Mr. Hendricks. The man growled under his breath, and it sounded like Cujo just before he jumped at the woman in the car. And I didn't feel like duking it out with Cujo and his two buddies. So I got into the back of the caddy with gentleman Johnny Marconi. It was turning out to be a very busy day, and I was still late for my appointment